And welcome back to another episode of the BisonReport.com radio podcast. This being your preview edition as the Bison head down to South Dakota this weekend to take on the Coyotes, and the basketball team heads out east to North Carolina for a tournament. And joining me, as always, to preview everything Bison related is my co-host Ross Uglum. Ross, how are you this afternoon?
I'm good. Winter is coming. I think there's going to be a pretty...
Has it started yet up there for you?
It's going to. I think tonight we're going to see the first little bits of snow, and then that snow is going to blow around as it is wont to do on the plains of North Dakota. So, just be careful, I guess, if you're headed to Vermilion, certainly, and hope everybody has safe travel down to South Dakota.
So let's start with the news that's pretty important since we last spoke in, Ross, and that's the new top 10 in the FCS playoff rankings. And shocker, NDSU moves from number 4 to number 1. NDSU 1, Eastern Washington 2, Jacksonville State 3, James Madison 4. The playoff committee, Ross, finally puts the Bison on top. Do you agree with that? And what are your thoughts on the rest of this top 10?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I agree with it, bias or no bias. You look at just strength of schedule and how far NDSU is ahead of the rest of the division, really. If you look at kind of more advanced statistics like a Sagarin, I think that there's some metric where NDSU is second behind Cal Poly, but that doesn't take into account the weakness of the Big Sky Conference compared to the MVFC as much as the advanced numbers do. And I think that those advanced numbers have proven pretty potent during the last couple of playoffs. You just look at the Valley's record in the playoffs compared to the Big Sky's record in the playoffs. So NDSU, number one strength of schedule, and to get through it with one loss, and that loss being to a top 10 team, I think it's going to be difficult to jump them this week. I think it was deserved, and I think, you know, they'll probably tell you that it just took to get all those athletic directors in a room together and to have a frank discussion about it to get it right. I think it also probably has a lot to do with the hell, really, that was raised by the Bison fans and honestly, too, the media, just over how ridiculous this was that they were ranked, fourth, and then even when they were ranked third, it wasn't very accurate. Now, it really only matters to get into the top two because then you get home field throughout. But man, that is an ideal scenario. I can tell you that having the number one seed, having home field throughout where the top seed in your bracket is, a name college from the East Coast. We love the name colleges. James Madison, Robert Morris, bring them on. None of them seem to be very good at football when they come west to the Fargo Dome. So that's an absolutely A1 scenario for Bison fans, no question.
So if you really do, I mean, if you do believe that they changed these rankings because of Bison fans and media, my rebuttal to that would be that's absolutely absurd. It shouldn't matter at all. They shouldn't be influenced by what fans and the media think. They should be just doing their own, you know, calculations and only having their own thoughts. But you look at the rest of this top 10, and there are a couple of new teams or newish teams at the bottom there that I think warrants a mention as well, Ross.
Yeah, and I totally agree with you. I just think that I don't know if they realized FCS always trying to be like the FBS with those ranking releases for the playoff, and I don't think they realized just how much people were going to care, and I don't think that the level of care was given that was required. And yeah, it did incite the Bison media, and I wouldn't say necessarily that they were swayed because NDSU fans told them to vote NDSU. I think that they were forced to actually look at things, but I see what you're saying. I mean, I understand that these should be independent thinking folk, with maybe the exception of whoever's sitting on the committee on behalf of the Valley. I think it's probably part of his job to champion for his conference. Anyway, but yeah, the local teams, I guess, that were affected as well here are South Dakota State checking in at number 10, and the University of North Dakota checking in at number 9, both right outside of not having to play on Thanksgiving weekend.
Yeah, so it's going to be an interesting final week here of the regular season to see how things shake out. But let's switch over to some basketball, Ross. Before then, I know that you were able to appear on one of the radio stations up there. Do you want to give some details on that if folks want to go back and listen?
Yeah, Keith Brake, who is the host of the Breakdown on Bison 1660, he was in Providence yesterday with the women's basketball team doing their play-by-play. So I hopped on his show during the 4 o'clock hour, and if you want to check that out, if this is just not enough audio goodness for you, you can check out, I think it's about a 28-minute segment with just me, or there's a longer segment because the other guest on the show was former Bison quarterback Brock Jensen. So some really good audio on that particular podcast. You guys can check that out on bison1660.com. Or certainly on their app, they also tweeted it out. So if that's something that interests you, go check it out for sure.
So let's talk some Bison basketball. I'm guessing the team is already on their way, if not already there in High Point, North Carolina. I believe that is just west of Greensboro. And so they are going to be in the High Point tournament this weekend. They will be starting that tomorrow afternoon at a 3 p.m. game against Navy, a 6 p.m. game on Saturday against UNC Greensboro. And then they will have their finale against the host school, High Point, on Sunday morning at 11:30. So let's talk some Bison basketball. Ross, how excited are you to see this Bison team back in action this weekend?
I mean, I think I'm just excited to get to watch three college basketball games in 3 days. That's not something that you generally get. Even the Summit League tournament, if you're a high seed, is 3 games and 4 nights, so it'll be a lot of fun to watch, and I'm excited about it for sure. I've just missed college basketball. I've been watching a ton of it during the evenings. I had a chance to watch the Duke-Kansas game, and America won. Duke lost. That's kind of how that works. It's just been a fun week.
All right, so let's get into it with this Navy game tomorrow. You look at what they've done in the season thus far. They have only played one game, and it was a 10-point loss to Ohio State. So what do we know about this Navy squad, and how much are you thinking that this team is probably going to give the Bison team a run for their money?
Well, anytime you go against a Big Ten team, you're usually going against superior athletes. Coach Richmond dropped a lot of cliches in the press conference when talking about this game, service academy, well-disciplined, all the things that you hear about that. But I think, you know, you and I discussed a little bit in the pre-production meeting that Navy was probably the best team. Certainly, I think as far as service academies go, you could make the argument with Air Force, I guess, but I think Navy probably has the best athletic program of the service academies. Going to be, I would say, the premier game from just a brand perspective of that tournament, Navy versus North Dakota State. Those would be the two most recognizable brands as far as college athletics are considered. So interesting to me that it's the 3 o'clock game on Friday, but I guess they had to do it however they had to do it. A team that's probably not going to get blown out one way or the other, and a team that should be very disciplined and run their scheme well. And NDSU is going to try to do the exact same thing. I haven't had a chance to see the Navy game against Ohio State, so any other analysis or commentary, I guess, would be mostly making stuff up.
All right, so let's get into these other couple of games here against Greensboro and High Point. Again, there's not a lot known on these teams other than what they've done thus far this season. Greensboro with a loss to Virginia and a win over Presbyterian, and High Point beat a D3 team and then they lost to Virginia Tech. So what do you think about these two final games on Saturday and Sunday, and ultimately how do you see this tournament ending up for the Bison?
I think, you know, High Point would probably be closest thing that this tournament would have to a Summit League team. UNC Greensboro is going to be very athletic. I think that they're going to be quite a lot like the Arkansas State team that NDSU faced in that opener at the Shields Ring. At the same time, I'm not sure that they're going to be quite as fast. They're probably going to have a little bit more length, though, than Arkansas State had. That was a pretty short club. So those would be kind of the things that I'd be looking for. I think ultimately it's tough to predict 3 wins in 3 days. I predicted a 2-1 weekend, probably sharing the title with somebody else for this particular preseason tournament, or I guess early season tournament, and just a successful weekend from the, you know, kind of the minutes management point of it.
So speaking of minutes management, I know that Coach Richmond talked about that a little bit earlier this week in terms of what he thinks he has to do in these next 3 games. Again, 3 games in 3 days, you're going to have some tired legs out there. So hopefully that means some of these younger guys are able to get an extended look. But what do you think?
Yeah, you know, Richmond, we sometimes give him a hard time for having a short bench and kind of obsessing over his upperclassmen or maybe not trusting the young kids as much or having a short leash, but this is not really something that's an option this upcoming weekend. You can't run kids for 34 minutes a night, 3 straight nights. It's not going to be good for anybody, I don't think. And so I'm interested to see when he goes to Jared Samuelson for extended stretches, how much Dan Goo gets to play, how much A.J. Jacobson gets to sit. This is a kid coming off of a thumb injury that was kind of the Iron Man because of his ability to switch between the 4 and the 3. That's a guy I think NDSU has to make sure they have at the end of the season. So you're going to see that longer bench for the Bison all 3 days. And if you want to watch some of these younger players develop, this is going to be a great weekend for that because he's going to have to let the young kids play if he wants to avoid grinding his upperclassmen into the ground.
And with that being said, I'm interested to get your thoughts. I know we talked about this in the last few weeks, and that's just these different lineup quirks we've been able to see thus far. Again, the media starting lineup you were handed wasn't one of the actual ones that you saw one of the games last weekend. So are you thinking there's going to be some more quirkiness in these starting lineups?
Oh, I'm interested to see, certainly. I think Navy is not a huge team. You might see that 3-guard lineup. That's a lineup that they were able to get away with because even though Corey Brown was only 6'4 or 6'5, he was a freak athlete and he had a 6'7, 6'8 wingspan. Gave you some offensive rebound and gave you some length, even a little bit of rim protection. That's not what Carlin Dupree gives you. He basically gives you a third point guard on the floor. So I'll be interested to see if we ever get that lineup that has Dan Goo as a starter, or if the kind of wide-eyed mistakes that he made against Arkansas State have slammed the door on that notion. If a team like Greensboro, who has more length, makes NDSU go to a more traditional lineup, or if they just stick with what's been working for so far this season, I'm interested to see if that's adaptable. It didn't seem like it was very adaptable when I asked the question at the press conference, but Richmond runs a very tight ship, and I'm not saying he was lying to me, but that doesn't mean that he necessarily is telling me everything about his program at all times.
So let's talk a little bit more about the bench in depth. Obviously, everybody here knows that Coach Richmond likes to use a short bench, you know, 6-7 guys, but I expect that to be somewhere between 9 and 10 maybe this weekend. Again, 3 games in 3 days is going to do that. How do you think this bench rotation shakes out? And again, do we know anything more about that battle for the second big spot?
We don't, but we're going to find out, I'm sure. I would anticipate, you know, both Miller and Eliason getting in that 14 to 18 minute a game type of range this entire 3-game stretch. I think that this is going to go a long way towards deciding that battle, but is not something that they're going to decide during this weekend, because there's no reason, if you feel comfortable with 10 guys, not to play 10 guys when you've got 120 minutes worth of games in 3 days. You might as well give these young big men a chance, because they're going to need Dexter Warner in conference play. If he goes down, you're talking about a situation where I think combined from last season, you've got 4, maybe 5 points per game from the post. So you need Dexter Warner this season. There's absolutely no reason not to give Goo, Miller, and Eliason plenty of minutes inside.
So finally, let's wrap up the Bison basketball talk with about this Bison squad making sure that they're putting themselves, you know, in the forefront on each and every game. I mean, Coach Richmond talked about it. They have to do themselves. They have to be worried about themselves so they can set themselves up for when things get meaningful come March. What did Coach Richmond have to say about that this week?
Right, and if you get a chance and you haven't, go take a look at the Bison Report weekly check. And I talked about doing us, and that's what he really meant when I asked the question. I was prying, really. I was trying to figure out why Goo never got the chance to start without asking the question directly. And his answer was that we didn't go with three guards because the other team was small. They're not worried about other teams. It makes their prep easier. They're just going to run their offense and run their defense pretty much no matter what the opposing team is bringing to the table. Now, are they going to be bullheaded and not use a double team here or there or maybe play a little bit of zone? No, they're going to make adjustments. But so much of their focus is on being the best team that they can be late in the season. Part of that is just a philosophy that Dave has, and part of that as well is the Summit League is a one-bid league. Yes, last year it spent time 9th, 10th, 11th in the country in conference RPI, but until that happens for a three-year stretch or until a team from the Summit League makes a Sweet 16 run, this is not going to be a league that the conference champion from the regular season gets to go to the tournament unless they win the tournament. So win the Summit tournament. So they have to be their best, the best version of themselves that they can possibly be going into that tournament in Sioux Falls, because that's how you get to the dance. And I mean, if we're being realistic, that's the pinnacle of mid-major basketball. Is North Dakota State ever going to win a national championship in Division I men's basketball? Probably not. I mean, that would be something certainly, but not anything that's within the immediate realm of possibility. So the goal for these kids is to go dancing. And to go dancing, they need to be the best version of themselves on, like, March 9th. And they're not building any kind of resume for seeding here in the middle of November. Ryan, what do you have for us in football and men's basketball recruiting?
So the only thing I really got this week is NDSU picked up a running back commit. Right after the official visit weekend last weekend, Seth Wilson, a kid from Holman, Wisconsin, someone that's been in our radar for the Bison Report since June, I believe we were talking him up, after he came to camp in June and absolutely put on a display. NDSU eventually offered him earlier in the fall here, and he decided after, maybe he heard about that Antoine Sims came up on an official, another running back, and he knew that spots were limited, but Seth pulled the trigger. And what you need to know about Seth is he is a one-man wrecking crew for his high school. He has 38 touchdowns in the season, 2,000-plus rushing yards, and he's averaging 9 yards a carry. He is an absolute load. From watching his tape back, Ross, I'd be curious for your thoughts on him as well. But in my eyes, I mean, he's not going to be a burner by any means, but he's just going to be a big running back who can really go through contact, and he's pretty elusive for a guy of his size. So what does that mean for the rest of running back recruiting? From talking with a source earlier this week, it sounds like they would still have room for Antoine Sims still potentially. They're not going to turn away talent if it wants to come here. And Antoine with a legitimate offer from Boston College, and I believe one or two other BCS schools, they're not going to turn down that kind of talent from Florida. But Seth is now in the fold. And so, Ross, I mean, you watched this tape we were talking about in the pre-production meeting. I'd be curious for your thoughts on Seth as well.
Well, like I told you, I was counting the players. I thought it might have been 9-man ball. I'd never heard of this town in Wisconsin, and I spend a decent amount of time there. So just level of competition, of course, concerns me, but what do you want against inferior competition out of a Division I prospect? Huge numbers. 30 touchdowns, that's huge numbers. This kid, what really blew me away on film, made me question the level of his competition, and it's always good to get that size athlete in the room. Whether he sticks at running back, I think at this point he's certainly going to do that, but those kids can always go over to linebacker. This is a guy I think that is going to be, in line for plenty of work down the line. His career, NDSU is going to graduate two really important running backs this upcoming season in King Frazier and Chase Morlock, and they're going to be snaps readily available. He'll be, you know, in competition with Adam Cofield. He'll be in competition with Damaris Purifoy, because Lance Dunn and Bruce Anderson are going to be in line for snaps. But there are generally between 45 and 55 running plays available during every Bison game. So somebody's got to run the ball, and that's what Seth Wilson is going to be certainly a part of moving forward.
And it's worth noting with Seth Wilson, he is being recruited as a running back. He's committed as a running back. Wisconsin wanted him badly as a preferred walk-on, but one of the main reasons he chose NDSU over sticking in Wisconsin is Wisconsin wanted him as an outside linebacker. They wanted him to walk on, and he said, I really want a chance at running back, and NDSU is able to give that to me. So that's one of the main points for Seth in terms of why he chose the Bison when he did. But Ross, let's get to your Brad Ambrosius interview with a little bit of a disclaimer there as well.
Yeah, I had a chance to sit down with both of the defensive ends this week, and I just want to let you know that this is an interview that was conducted in the immediate presence of two of the defensive tackles. So when he makes the joke about Jack Darnell being soft, that is a joke. Jack is right there. There is no controversy on the defensive line at North Dakota State. But this was a pretty good lighthearted interview with Brad, and we'd like to share that with you right now.
Here with Bison senior defensive end Brad Ambrosius. Brad, how's it going?
It's a pretty good day so far. Yeah, nothing too hectic. It's a pretty warm day in Florida, which is nice.
Starting to sink in a little bit that we're winding down.
Yeah, it is actually. It's a weird feeling, actually, that I'm finally a senior. 4 years goes by fast.
So let's kind of start at the beginning. Talk about your recruiting process a little bit. Who was your recruiter?
Tim Palsik was the running back coach in the OC right now. When he was first here, he wasn't the offensive coordinator, but he left for a little bit to go to Northern Illinois and came back.
Okay. What happened in that season in 2000, I think it was 13, where you had to have your redshirt pulled?
We had five active defensive ends. Three were seniors, and one of them, Jeremy Gordon, tore his ACL halfway through the year, and they needed another fifth guy just in case another one went down. So they decided to pull my redshirt and give me some minutes at the end of, I think it was, Missouri State game.
Okay. Do you ever wish you could trade 2013 for next year?
Oh, yeah, I do all the time. I didn't get a lot of meaningful reps in 2013. I was mostly just a scrubby guy who came in at the got six reps at the end of the game and we're up, and then next year would have been a very key year for me.
Sure. Got to ask you about the hair. Is that a 365-day-a-year thing, or is that more of like an in-season mentality type of deal?
It's a football thing. Before me, Cole Jurek had it, and then Kyle Mano had it too, so we just kind of passed it along from defensive end generation. So it's a more of an in-season football kind of thing.
Let's talk X's and O's for just a little bit here. What are the differences between what you're asked to do it at left end, which is traditionally, you know, you've got a tight end on your side, as opposed to what Greg is asked to do?
Well, Greg's obviously coming from the blind side of the quarterback. He's more of a pass rusher. He's asked to be a quicker, while I'm more of the power guy. I'm asked to take on a lot of run responsibilities and keep the quarterback in the pocket, because if I get too high, the quarterback can see whatever I'm doing. He can step up, he can roll out, he can do a bunch of other things that Greg's not really asked to do on the right defensive end side.
You and Greg feel like there's more pressure to create pass rush with Nate being gone because he was such a good interior pass rusher?
We do, but, you know, there's a lot of guys that are interior guys right now that are really pass rushers that we have faith in, so we're not too pressured by it, but at the same time, the coaches have talked to us about making sure we keep him in the pocket, make sure we do our 111 to make sure that we're on point.
Two guys for sure that have seen an increase in reps since Nate went down. What are your impressions so far of Blake and then, of course, of Jack?
Jack Darnell's a good guy. I think he's a little soft at times, but other than that, him and Blake provide a nice presence in the middle. They're mini Nates. Nate wasn't all perfect when he got here either, so you just got to keep working at it.
You guys have had seven defensive ends this season get a snap. Is it tough to play in a rotation like that? I mean, would you like to play more of an every down role, or are you fine staying fresh and being part of a deep rotation?
I've done it both ways in high school, and then last year, me and Greg kind of took most of the reps, or basically all of them. But I think it's almost better playing in a deeper kind of rotation. You feel fresher at the end of the game and in the middle of the game, whereas towards the end of the game last year, me and Greg would be gassed. We couldn't get a pass rush. We couldn't do a lot of things. So I think a deeper rotation is honestly better.
Kleiman talks about how the word revenge is not something that really goes around this program. You guys know, I mean, that this was the team that beat, I mean, you had two losses last year, but this was the conference team that beat you last year. How much does that go into this game, and how difficult is it to just remove it from your mind?
I wouldn't say you remove it from your mind. I wouldn't say it's a revenge game either. It's more of the fact that we didn't take them seriously last year. We let ourselves down last year, and this year we're a lot more focused. We're a lot more driven. We know that we're not all world this year. We got to keep playing. So it's not a revenge game, but you got to keep in the back of your mind, like, this team beat us last year, and we want to kind of come back and give it to them.
What do you have to do better, and I mean better in the sense of, like, than you've been doing this season and also in what happened the last game? What do you have to do better to beat South Dakota this season?
We got to contain the quarterback, for one. He's a really good runner. They got a stud O-line that I think is very good, very physical kind of guys. Their wide receivers have a good, strong core. Their running backs are decent. I mean, their offense is just good in general. So we need to, for one, we need to stop the quarterback, though. I think he's the main threat to us.
What are your plans for after the season?
You know, going to work out, get a train, hopefully the next level gets in contact with me. If not, going to be a teacher, going to move on with life. The dream's still alive, but if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen.
All right, thanks, man.
Appreciate it.
All right, we'd like to thank Brad, of course, for taking the time to chat with me and come on the show, and good luck to him and the rest of his teammates in South Dakota. Speaking of which, Ryan, let's talk a little bit about the grand scale of this game. We'll do one more interview, and then we'll dive deep.
Yeah, so let's just a preliminary look here. My first question for you, is this a revenge game? I'm sure Bison fans are well aware of this game last season where South Dakota won in the Fargo Dome in October, a 24-21 comeback win for South Dakota. How much do you think that's playing into the back of the minds of these Bison football players?
I mean, I know the coaches aren't going to push it. It's not their style, certainly not Kleiman's style. But even just talking, and you'll hear when I speak to Greg here, they know who beat them, and they know that they didn't take them seriously last season, and that's not going to happen again. This is a team that went into the Fargo Dome and came out with a win, and that's not acceptable to the kids in this program, and they remember who won that game last year. They're going to go out and have a very business-like approach to this, not get too high, not get too low. So I would definitely not call this a revenge game, but they are aware of what happened last season. There's no question about it.
So let's talk a little bit about the ramifications for this game. If NDSU wins, I believe that puts them on track for their sixth straight Missouri Valley football conference championship. And there's also another game going on in that same state of South Dakota that's going to play a large part in everything. So can you break down those two things for us?
I don't think that game's in South Dakota, but it does involve a South Dakota school. I believe that game is in Northern Iowa. Anyway,
I'll check.
The point is here, the game against South Dakota, if it's a victory, that is the sixth straight MVFC title. It's a championship, whether it's shared with South Dakota State or not. They shared the last two with Illinois State. They got the one that matters at the end, but they're not going to not hang the banner if they split it with South Dakota State. Now, if Northern Iowa takes care of South Dakota State,
at home for you and I, by the way, senior day.
If they are able to take care of business, they might just backdoor their way into the playoffs at 6-5. What that would do, then, in my opinion, is it would clearly knock South Dakota State into having to play on Thanksgiving weekend, possibly just because of how they do things. Because UND is off, a loss by South Dakota State, I believe, would solidify UND in the top eight, because Central Arkansas and Sam Houston State play each other this week, and everybody knows that that's a trash conference. So the loser of that game, in my opinion, is going to get kicked out of the top eight. And either SDSU or UND is going to jump in. Now, if South Dakota State beats Northern Iowa handily and they get knocked out of the playoffs completely, and they being Northern Iowa, I believe because UND is idle and because everybody understands just how weak of a schedule they played, South Dakota State will jump in to the top eight, take the place of the Sam Houston State game, Sam Houston State, Sam Houston State Central Arkansas loser, and then they will be in that top eight and locked into a home playoff game and a bye week during Thanksgiving weekend. So there are serious ramifications going on, in my opinion, in Cedar Falls because of how diversely it's going to affect these regional teams. I think the worst fear that everybody has, just from how this game is or this early playoff season has been regionalized lately, is you end up with the South Dakota State loss. UND gets bumped up to number eight. They host South Dakota State, and it's South Dakota State versus eighth-ranked UND in the second round for the ability to play number one-ranked North Dakota State. Now, I think you and I both know how that would go. I don't really think the University of North Dakota would have any chance in a game against South Dakota State, but I don't think the Bison want to see the Jacks anytime in the playoffs either.
So how many Valley teams do you see getting in with how you see these games playing out this weekend? So how many do you think get in, and how many do you think will be in?
Indiana State's coach said they should send five every year, and I totally agree. I think that it's by far the best conference in the division. I think six teams have a legitimate chance of getting in. I think five should and four will, and people will complain. That's what my guess is. I think that the MVFC has kind of cannibalized itself so badly this year that especially if Northern Iowa beats South Dakota State, there's just going to be so many teams that have more losses than they would if they played in a different conference that it's going to be an issue. So it'll be four for sure. It might be five, especially if UNI wins, but I think the Valley will ultimately be disrespected as it has been so many times.
So let's get into this Greg Menard interview, shall we?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, had the chance to speak to both defensive ends, both starting defensive ends this week. And so here is our interview with Greg, and there's no disclaimer needed here.
Here with Bison junior defensive end Greg Menard. Greg, how's it going?
It's going good. How about yourself?
Not bad, not bad. Let's kind of start at the beginning, I guess. I always ask guys about their recruiting process. Who was your recruiter and how who else was kind of involved, and how did you end up at North Dakota State?
I remember I was committed to North Dakota State, and the whole coaching change thing happened, and I was kind of confused. I didn't know what was going on, and then Coach Gazer at that point became my biggest recruiter, and he stopped by my house, and I remember he stopped by the day after they won a semifinal game. I thought that was pretty cool. So after that, I took my official visit and committed, and that's pretty much how it started.
You're a really good high school player. Did the Big 10, Big 12 teams, did they just tell you you were too small, or what was kind of the deal there?
Yeah, that was what it was mostly. Minnesota wanted me to play linebacker, which I tried. I wasn't very natural at it. Iowa State said I was too small. Most of those schools just didn't give me a chance.
So what confluence events occurred for you to get your redshirt pulled your freshman year?
I remember the first game against Iowa State, Mike Hardy got hurt. And they were kind of just seeing who else could come in there and try to relieve some reps from Kyle. And so they kind of just told me, hey, we're bringing you to Weber State, and if you play, you play. If you don't, you don't. So I end up playing that game and try to progressively get better from there.
There's an old adage that pass rushing comes in bunches. That has not been the case for you this season. You've been very consistent every game. You know, one sack, half sack. How's that been going as opposed to last year where you had those monster games? And can you feel that monster game coming?
Yeah, I think that's definitely me and Coach Camp talked about that. It's the one thing I've been missing this year is a game when I get three sacks or four sacks or something like that. But I do like the consistency, one sack a game, but I do really want to get a game where I explode kind of.
Sure, sure. You know, we talked about your size a little bit, and at the potential next level, somebody's probably going to want to use you like the Chargers use Kyle at outside linebacker. You've been doing some stand-up stuff. You've been moving around. Is that stand-up stuff all this is for the betterment of the team, or have you had conversations about, like, hey, this is going to help you moving forward?
I just do what they tell me to do, the coaches tell me to do. I'm a little more comfortable with my hand in the ground still, but they give me an assignment, I just do it, and I mean, if it does help me in the future, so be it. But right now, I'm really only thinking about the next game.
Right,
so,
right, yeah. Right. Explain your sack celebration.
Well, back home, one of my friends was obsessed with Johnny Manziel, and he's like, you need to do it in a game. Like, it'll be cool, like Money Menard. And I was like, nah, that's dumb. And then the Sam Houston State game my freshman year, I got a sack, and I did it. And then everyone in here gave me a bunch of crap for it, made fun of me. And then it kind of just...
So you just owned it.
Yeah, I just kind of owned up to it after that. So,
you guys are playing in a rotation. I mean, there have been 7 defensive ends to get snaps now that Cole Karch is a little bit more of a part of things. Do you miss, like last season when it was mostly you and Brad, or do you enjoy playing in a deep rotation?
Definitely do not miss just being me, Brad, going like that. The Montana game, the first game I started, was awful. We both played about 80 snaps and died towards the end of that game. And at the beginning of this year, we kind of struggled with rotating too, because everyone wants to play, and me and Brad really want to play bad, so we have a hard time taking ourselves off the field to get a breather every once in a while. And so we talked to Coach Kane about that, and now we're doing a better job of rotating. It really shows in the end of games we're more fresh, I think, now.
How's a Minnesota kid like you end up being such a Patriots fan?
My dad grew up in Boston,
okay.
So he is a huge Patriots fan, and so I grew up loving him, and I'm loyal.
Nate Tangway, obviously lost for the season, really good interior pass rusher. Is there more pressure on the defensive ends now to create a pass rush without Nate?
I think to a certain extent there is, but I think at the same time they don't want us to try to do too much or media, especially this week with South Dakota coming up. We need to make sure we keep his quarterback in the pocket and to make him try to beat us with his arm, not his legs, because he will beat you with his legs.
Two guys specifically that are getting more snaps with Nate out, your impression so far of Blake Williams and Jack Darnell?
Well, Blake's actually my roommate, and so okay. I'm happy for him that he's getting a chance to play more.
Did you guys come in together?
Yeah, we were in the same class. We were freshman roommates, too. So,
okay.
Yeah, I'm really glad for him. He's doing good out there, and he's making plays and helping others make plays and doing a good job in there. And Jack, obviously, another Minnesota kid, he's doing a good job in there, and he's getting better every game.
Kleiman makes a point to not use the word revenge, doesn't like to talk about that, but this is the conference team that beat you guys last year.
Mm-hmm.
How difficult is that to get out of your mind? What kind of a role does it play in this Saturday's game?
I don't know if we're looking for revenge, but definitely it is in our mind. We remember last year them beating us, and we do want to beat them this year. But you can't let revenge is too strong of emotion, and then when you're playing with emotion and not passion, that's when you go out there and you make dumb mistakes and you start yelling at your teammates and stuff like that. So you need to just keep a level head through it all, but know in the back of your head that they are capable of beating you and have before.
What do you have to do against South Dakota, not only just in relation to like, well, what do you have to do that you didn't do last year to win, but what do you have to continue to improve on as this year's team to be successful in this game?
We definitely need to make sure we keep the quarterback in the pocket, and the quarterback draw game is going to be big. I know South Coast State has a big issue for us, and they got a really good quarterback for a quarterback draw. So we want to make sure that we eliminate that from the game plan. And so we also want to make sure we are very disciplined with the pulling guards, and so they have a lot of that going on, and just make sure we make them one-dimensional. I don't think they can beat us passing like that. So I think we want to stop the run and be physical in the run game.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, one last dive into the South Dakota game, and then we're done for the regular season.
So let's do this. Let's talk about that number one seed, as you said. This team knows what's in front of them, and that is a potential number one seed, which means home field advantage throughout the FCS playoffs. How much do you think that that's going to be in their back of their minds this entire game, and how are they going to be dealing with that kind of excitement?
Well, I think it has to be. I think, you know, this game, you circle it on the calendar. These are the guys that beat us last year. Well, then you circle it on the calendar. Well, we know we have a chance at an MVFC title. Now you circle it on the calendar because, oh, we're the number one seed. Win and we stay there. That's a lot of pressure going into a conference road game. There's no question about it. I mean, this is a game that they're going to be favored in. But at the same time, there is a ton riding on the result of this football game. So it's just going to be interesting to watch, and I think it's going to be really early when you're able to tell just how well North Dakota State is handling all of those different elements of who wins and loses this game.
So let's start with this South Dakota offense. You have to start with their signal caller, Chris Strebler, someone that transferred in from Minnesota.
Yeah, your guy.
I'm well aware of everything that Chris Strebler can do. Before I toss it over to Ross, I've been able to see Chris for about 3 years when he was at Minnesota. What you need to know is he was one of the best athletes on their roster. He's all of 6'2", 220 pounds, and he can run. He can run very well, and he is not afraid of physicality. The issue is Minnesota was moving him around from quarterback because Chris, his throwing motion isn't the prettiest thing in the world. He has some issues with his accuracy. So when I looked at the stats before the show today, I was pretty surprised to see that he's completing over 60% of his passes, his 20 passing touchdowns, and has a 2-to-1 touchdown-interception ratio. And he also has 760 yards on the ground with 8 rushing touchdowns. So very much a dual threat at quarterback for South Dakota, Ross. And you saw how that worked out against South Dakota State, when South Dakota State's quarterback, Taryn Christian, was able to run for over 100 yards and I believe a couple of touchdowns there. So how do you think this Bison defense is going to hold up against the dual threat that is Chris Strebler?
I mean, I had a chance to talk to the defensive tackles when I was in their room. They're breaking down film. This is a team that is not worried very much about his ability to throw the football, and they will be scouting him to run. There's no question about it. You ask any of those kids, and they're not trying to make excuses, but they were not ready to deal with Taryn Christian, because that's not something that South Dakota State put on film. Is that a coaching error? Is that an overstep in preparation? Yeah, certainly, but they are not making that error with Strebler. They talked about the amount of reads that they could tell that he makes before he pulls the ball down, and it's not many. I mean, he is a one and a half, two read guy. And what I mean by that, of course, is when you drop back to pass, how many different receivers do you look at before it's time to pull the ball down and run? And for Chris Strebler, it ain't many. And you mentioned the guy that does not shy away from physical contact, a guy that is more than happy to take a hit, even at the quarterback position. A player that I believe the starter from last season is still on the roster, so they're not at all worried about Chris Strebler getting hurt. And this is a game, of course, where their season's not going to continue, so I'm sure they could care less. But it is senior day. It is the last game of the season for these guys, so Strebler's going to be, in my opinion, you know, a number one guy to slow down.
So let's talk a little bit more about the running game in depth. Chris leads the team with 760 yards, and right behind him is the running back, Trevor Bouma. He's someone that was able to rush for 94 yards last season against the Bison, 4.7 yards per carry. So if you're this Bison defense, once again, you have to think you have to stop this South Dakota rushing attack first and foremost, right?
Certainly. I mean, they do a good job running the ball. NDSU prides himself on run defense. Sometimes they struggle QB run defense, but almost never defending the back. They had trouble defending Bouma last year, and it's a guy that I know Kleiman has a tremendous amount of respect for. Called him out specifically in the Monday press conference as a guy that he won't be sad to see him go. And I know that is obviously meant with the utmost level of respect. Bauma's a player that has a little bit of speed, but in the same sense as Strebler, just really does a good job of inviting that contact and making two-yard gains into four, something that NDSU needs to limit with sure tackling, and they are definitely going to be paying attention to what Trevor Bauma's doing all game long, because, to be honest with you, South Dakota doesn't have much of a number one receiver threat.
No, they do not. I know Coach Kleiman also had some words about this Bison football team, a lot of the same things he said about Indiana State in the previous week, and he just wants fans to know this team is going to keep playing whether the opponent is great or not.
Yeah, and that's, you know, what happened, and I guess what my point was there is they got into so much chippy stuff with Indiana State last week, and however much blame you want to place on the players from North Dakota State there, however much blame you want to place on the players from Indiana State, I don't really care. The point is, you need to get to a place where you're playing smart football and not reacting to what's going on around you if that could result in injury, if that could result in a suspension for the first playoff game, whatever. South Dakota's season is over, and I like Bob Nielsen plenty. I appreciate the work that he's done there so far. I appreciated everything he did at Western Illinois. I don't think he runs a dirty program. This isn't a reflection on him. But these South Dakota kids know that they're done, and they know that NDSU is going to continue on. So any chippy stuff like that, anything that could get a guy in trouble or get a guy hurt moving forward just needs to be paid attention to, because this is, you know, hopefully NDSU plays five more games this season and not like three. So it's a big deal for the Bison to keep their heads during this game down in Vermillion.
And South Dakota is a team that's been playing a lot of close games of late. I talked with Mick Gary of the Argus Leader, and from his conversation, which you can read on the Bison Report in our Know Your Enemy series, he talked a lot about the last 3 weeks have been an emotional hell for this South Dakota team. They've lost two of their last three games on essentially the last play. So this is a team that's been really beaten down. They lost by 1 point to Western Illinois, lost by 7 to Southern Illinois, and then last week to 7 to South Dakota State. This is a team that's very used to playing in tough games, Ross. And so I don't think this Bison team should be taking them very lightly because of it.
Well, this is the exact kind of stuff that happens right before you get really good. I mean, this is what happened to the Bison in 2010. You lose heartbreaking games until you learn how to win them. And I think, like I said, Nielsen is an impressive coach, a guy that I have a lot of respect for, a guy that, and this might not be great to talk about, but, I mean, this is a guy that has been mentioned a number of occasions as a potential Chris Klieman replacement should Chris take that FBS job that is potentially offered to him in the future. Nielsen is a respected coach, and I think he's going to have USD playing at a high level. I think they're potentially looking at some facility upgrades down there, and they're going to eventually be pretty good. They're going to learn how to win, but this season they've been losing close games. I just think that it says a lot about the talent level of the team that they were able to not get blown out by South Dakota State at home, because that is a difficult place to play. That is a really good FCS team, and it is their, you know, number one rival. It's their in-state squad that they go up against. So to not get blown out in that game, I think, speaks to the talent level that's at USD and speaks to the fact that they have to be taken seriously. This is a road game in the Valley.
And when you look at this team on the defensive side of the ball, South Dakota, that is, this is where they have issues. And again, from talking with Mick Gary, he wasn't very high on a lot of the personnel on this South Dakota defense. And when you look at them statistically, they're giving up over 5 yards a carry and 8 yards a pass. So this hopefully may be a game where this Bison passing attack could potentially get back on track. But more than likely, you're going to see a lot of running, a lot of running.
Yeah, Polisek's not going to not run the ball, and he's certainly not going to not run the ball when the opposing team is up over 5 yards a carry, and that's against teams that don't run the ball as well as North Dakota State does. I think you've seen a complete gelling of the offensive line. You're going to get Brock Robbins back in close to full capacity. That's your number one fullback. There's going to be tons of power. There's going to be tons of outside G. You're probably going to see a little bit of QB run with Easton. There's going to be a lot of running the football, but at the same time, you said 8-plus yards per passing play against these guys, and this is an NDSU team that's really going to probably get one last shot here at a non-competitive game, one last shot here at a non-competitive defense to get whatever confidence they're going to have going into those playoffs. And yeah, is this defense probably good enough to carry them to a national championship? Certainly, but wouldn't it be a lot easier if the offense was capable of scoring in the 30s or 40s against in a game where the defense maybe isn't completely up to par? So, like you said, awful, awful defense for South Dakota. Can this Bison offense get going? Yes. Will it be through the air? Probably not.
So when you look at this game in terms of how things could go game flow-wise, you have to think that the NDSU gets out to an early lead, and what that does, and it puts South Dakota in negative game scripts where they can't really continue to go to the run where Chris Streveler excels. So if you want to beat the South Dakota team, make Chris Streveler throw the ball more than 30 times a game, and usually good things are going to happen. So is that how you see this game playing out, or what would be the ideal kind of game flow scenario for this Bison squad.
I mean, I don't know if that's how I see it playing out, but that's certainly the ideal flow of the game. You want to get into a situation, and that's, I think, potentially your number one hope for the passing game. Why would they pass the ball? Well, to get a lead, because a lead takes away the running game from a team that pretty much just runs the ball, especially with Strebler in there. You get up 17 on South Dakota, they're pretty much cooked because Bauma's not as big a part of the game. Strebler probably needs to throw the ball downfield unless he's getting just huge chunks of yardage every time he runs it. But this will be a game where the pass rush is going to be slow. They're going to maintain lanes. I don't know if they're going to spy Strebler or not. They seem like a team that feels like they have good enough athletes on the defensive line where if they don't jet rush the whole time, they'll feel a lot better about being able to contain Strebler. But if you turn him into a passing quarterback and you turn that team into a team that has to throw the ball on every down, that's going to effectively end the game and capture that sixth straight Missouri Valley Conference title.
So before we get into the prediction part of the segment, wrap things up, is this a game where you think that they leave no doubt? Again, final game of the regular season, do they leave no doubt and let the entire FCS know NDSU is the number one overall seed and get used to it?
I mean, they have to. I really think that if they win a close game and Eastern Washington trashes their opponent, you could see a committee that's proven to be very fickle drop them down to number two. Do I care? No, I don't have any problem with being the number two seed. It probably means they end up with Jacksonville State at the Fargo Dome before heading to Frisco, Texas. But what I do potentially have an issue with is just the respect level, and they need to, I think, dominate this game. And even if Eastern dominates their game, that's going to be it. They're going to be the number one seed. So I would pay attention to the final score in this one. They laid waste to Indiana State. I don't think Indiana State's quite as good as South Dakota, but I think this is a team that has a mission of putting up a pretty good scoring margin in this contest in Vermillion.
So let's talk about that game in Vermillion for the prediction part of the segment here at 2 p.m. kickoff. NDSU is a 15.5 point favorite, a 52 over-under. I'm going to say NDSU runs for 255 yards, three rushing touchdowns, in a 31-14 victory in Vermillion. What say you, Ross?
I got 38-17. I've got even more scoring.
So let's... I think that's going to wrap things up here. Ross, you want to give folks a preview of the rest of the content that you're going to have this week on thebisonreport.com?
Yeah, I had a chance to talk to Blake Williams last week, had a chance to talk to the defensive ends this week, so we're going to do a little bit of a spotlight on that defensive line that's been challenged without the services of Nate Tangway. And then sometime probably, I would guess, on Saturday morning, I'm going to drop that Northern Iowa. So excited about that UNISDSU game. I'm going to drop that South Dakota NDSU preview.
All right, sounds good. So that's going to wrap things up for this edition of the BisonReport.com radio podcast. We want to thank Greg and Brad for their time again for coming on the podcast. So we will talk with you guys next week as we break down hopefully a 3-0 weekend in High Point and a 1-0 weekend in Vermillion. So for Ross, for myself, we thank you guys for listening, and go Bison.